Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage as we travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, award-winning author of The Snow Child, Eowyn Ivey. Following a Pulitzer Prize nomination and an international book tour, Eowyn returned home to Alaska to speak to the Anchorage Friends of the Library. Eowyn's talk on how reading, books, and libraries shaped her life as a writer was recorded at the Lusac Library in Anchorage on October 9th.
Okay, let's go ahead and get started. My name is Carol Sturjaluski. I'm the secretary for the Friends of the Library. Thank you for coming tonight. Every year we have a speaker at our annual meeting, just to throw a little gift in the mix. We're fortunate tonight to have with us Eowyn Ivey. I'm sure many of you are familiar with her name. She is a longtime Alaskan, and I'm going to out her here a little bit. Yes, her name is from The Lord of the Rings. Eowyn is a longtime, lifelong Alaskan, grew up in Palmer and spent many years as a journalist out in the valley working with Fireside Books. And a few years ago, she decided to start writing. And one of the things that she created was a beautiful book, The Snow Child, which, so far as we know, is the first Alaska novel to reach the shortlist for the Pulitzer Prize for fiction, which is a wonderful accomplishment, and it is a beautifully, beautifully written piece. She's also, I know, been doing some short stories and traveling. The book has been translated into I don't know how many languages now, but a lot. And despite that, she has been very generous of her time with libraries. Her book was part of Anchorage Reads last year, and she's come and spoken to various literary and literature and literacy related groups around town. So we're very fortunate to have her here today, and afterwards we will have some of her books on sale and she can sign them. So please join me in welcoming Eowyn Ivey.
Thank you all very much. I'm really honored to be here tonight. I'm a lifelong library fan. And as I was coming in, my husband knows sometimes I get a little nervous when I'm getting ready to public speak. And he said, "Are you nervous?" And I said, "No, this is going to be a friendly crowd. These are library people. I'll be okay. I don't think they'll be mean to me." So I did grow up in Palmer. And what I wanted to do tonight is kind of maybe talk a little bit about my path as a reader and as a writer and the role that libraries have played in that. And then at the end, I'm happy to answer any questions if anybody has any questions, either about the book or if those of you who are writers want to talk about the writing process or the publishing process. I'm very open. I'm hoping you all have some questions because that makes it more fun for me, really. As I said, I grew up in Palmer and I attended schools out there. Those of you who know the area, I went to Swanson and Sherrod, the same schools that my daughters are at right now, it feels kind of funny that way. But many of my earliest memories really are tied to books and to libraries. Both my parents were avid readers. My father had gotten a builder, a designer, but he had gotten his degree in English literature. And my mom was a poet and an avid reader my whole life. And it was fun because one of the places that I have the earliest memories from is Palmer Public Library, which when I was a little girl was in City Hall. Now, City Hall in Palmer is very tiny. And it was just a room in City Hall. And Jeannie, who I still see at the grocery store sometimes, was the librarian. And on the front counter, there was a jar that said something about, if you feel guilty because you've damaged a book or turned it in late, put your spare change in this jar to help us cover our costs. And I'm trying to remember exactly how I was. Sally Gwynn, some of you who have been with the libraries for a long time would have known her. She was the children's librarian, and she would read books in a little alcove to the children. And it was fun listening to you all talk about the book sale, because that was like a major event in my family, the library book sale. And my husband would, I mean, my dad would joke that he could not build bookshelves quick enough for my mom as she would go to these library book sales. And it was just once a year in Palmer at that time, but she would fill up the back of one of our vehicles with boxes, and a lot of those books are still on her bookshelves and have a really kind of a soft spot in my heart for them. They mean a lot to me. And as I was growing up, even as I moved into adolescence, the library was a place, kind of a safe place for me to go. After school, it was a place that I could just go and browse among the shelves, and I didn't know what I was going to find. And of course, this is before I even knew about like New York Times book reviews, and Goodreads hadn't been invented. And I could just go and browse and just pick up a book and not have any idea what I was going to find or where it was going to take me. And it was a really important, I think, transformative part of my life growing up, to be able to go there and have that place to be. I went on to go to college at Western Washington University. My husband and I moved down there to Bellingham, and I started out as an English major with a creative writing emphasis, but I kind of realized at some point that it just really wasn't the atmosphere that I wanted to be in. I wanted to learn a craft. I wanted to learn, get my hands dirty, and really find out about writing. So I eventually switched to the journalism department, which was a really good fit for me. I really enjoyed the people, and we were actively producing writing, and we were putting out newspapers and magazines, and it was really exciting. And as a part of that degree, I had to do an internship. So my husband and I came back to Palmer. We always knew we would come back to Alaska, but I don't know, especially when I was in middle school, I don't know that I would have thought I'd be back in Palmer, my hometown. But I was going to just do the six-week internship and then move on someplace else. And like Alaskans tell these kinds of stories a lot. 10 years later, I was still at the Frontiersman and had kind of fallen in love again with Palmer as an adult. It was a very different place than how I remembered as a little girl. And it had grown a lot in different ways. And there was a wonderful bookstore called Fireside Books. And all these things that had developed in terms of arts and literature that were really exciting to me. And I worked those 10 years doing everything. You know, small town newspapers, you just do everything when you work there. So I did photography and writing, of course, columns. And I covered actually a lot of library things. It was interesting listening to the meeting tonight, because it is a constant issue for communities, finding how to find the funding for libraries, keeping support going for them. And I wrote a lot of stories about those kinds of struggles. And I also got to do a feature piece about Sally Gwynn, the children's librarian that was there when I was a little girl. She had written a book, and so that was a really fun thing to get to do. But eventually I realized, although I was having a lot of fun, I was learning about writing. It was not the kind of writing I loved. Like, I didn't read newspapers and magazines for fun. I just didn't have the passion for it. What I loved and always had were novels, was fiction. And so I took kind of a risk. It was a scary move to make, really, for me, because I felt like I had a not a great paying career, but a real career in journalism. And I left that to go work at Fireside Books as a bookseller. But it was a really wonderful move for me. And it was from there that I got to become really inspired again about fiction, about writing fiction and reading it, talking with other people about literature. And it was there that I found the book that kind of set off my idea about The Snow Child. And those of you who were at maybe my Anchorage Reads events or something, you've probably heard about this a little bit before, but I'll go ahead and tell the story. It was just a little paperback scholastic children's book called The Snow Child, illustrated by Barbara LaValle, the Alaskan artist. And it was a rare moment at the bookstore when I was there by myself. I was actually pregnant with my second daughter. It was just kind of a quiet time. I was shelving books, and I came across it. And I read it, and I thought, oh, this is the story I want to tell. And it was sort of a scary realization, because I had almost 5 years invested in an entirely different novel that I was maybe three quarters of the way done with. And I had this sort of love-hate relationship with. And for a while, I tried to resist this new idea because I felt like it was really kind of flaky of me to put 5 years into something and then drop it to move on to something else. But the more I thought about it, sometimes I've joked that it was like I was having an affair on my novel because I was working, you know, I'd go and I'd do the hard work with the novel I was supposed to be writing, but then on the side, I'm over there researching Snegorochka online, which was the fairy tale. It's a Russian fairy tale that tells the story of an old man and a woman who can't have children, and one day they build a little girl out of snow and she comes to life. And there was something about the story that just really spoke to me, and I kept researching and discovering this really rich history in Russia of this fairy tale, and I finally thought, you know, this is where my heart is, I'm going to take the dive. And so I started working on that novel. And then I think I was maybe, I was getting over halfway done with it when my mom and I decided to go to the Kachemak Bay Writers Conference, and I think some of you have been there and are familiar with it. And it was there that, and this is where libraries come back into my life. They come back into my life a lot of times, but this is in a quirky way that I never anticipated. There was an agent there from New York City who was giving slots to sign up to speak with him about your manuscript. My mom and I had gone to just learn more about our craft and talk with other writers and have fun, and so that wasn't part of my intention. But then I noticed the books that he represented, and it was books like Art of Racing in the Rain, Finn, Enslaved by Ducks, and I knew them, I thought, wow, this is the real deal, this guy's for real. And my mom said, well, you should sign up and talk with him. And I said, my book's not done. I don't know what, you know, I don't want to go talk to this guy. I'm scared. She kept encouraging me, and he squeezed me in. He actually didn't have any slots left, and he made a little bit of room for me. I told him the story, and he said, great, I want to see the first 100 pages. And I was like, oh, no. I hadn't brought the manuscript with me because I didn't anticipate showing it to anybody. So I called my husband. I tried to call him. We live up in Chickaloon, and I tried to reach him on the telephone, and he wasn't answering because he was outside doing firewood. So I had to call the neighbors, and they had to drive over and get him to go to the phone. And I'm in a panic, and this man is standing, who at this point is a complete stranger to me, Jeff, my agent, who I very much respect and enjoy now. But at the time, I was intimidated by him, and he's standing there kind of tapping his fingers during this. And I said, you've got to get on the computer, find these chapters. They're all different Word documents. It's a mess. Print them out, and we've got to figure out a way for you to fax them to Land's End Hotel. 100 pages. Where's the nearest fax machine? Sutton Public Library. So he drives down. He bundles up our two daughters, these 100 pages of my manuscript, and drives down to Sutton Library, where they are very gracious. And for whatever it was, a nickel a page or whatever, he faxed it down to Land's End Hotel. And the agent read it there that night. And much to my complete delirious surprise, he offered to represent it the next day at the conference. And so that kind of kicked off the whole process. As far as I now had an agent, I had to finish the manuscript, and we went through, I think it was about a year of working with him on revisions. That was a really big surprising part of the process, as he's a fantastic editor. He kind of put me through the ropes to make this as good of a manuscript as I could. And then he took it out to, and I'm thinking that was 2008. I mean, it was a good while before he started taking it out to publishers. And eventually, Little Brown and Company acquired it here in the United States. And again, to my surprise, there were a lot of there continue to be surprises with this process. But simultaneously, publishers in Norway, the UK, Italy, Germany, and France, I think, acquired at the same time. And I think we're up to, Carol mentioned, I was trying to think, I think we're like at 25 languages. 30-some countries. I just got an email from my Hebrew translator, which was just, I mean, he's in Israel, and it made me giddy to think about it, and he was excited to be translating it. But anyways, one of the surprises that came, though, is that Norway actually published it first. So each of these publishers has their own schedule. They come up with their own cover designs, their own artwork, which I don't see until it comes in a box to me. And they hire their own translators, and they come up with their own publishing schedule. So I was kind of shocked when it was coming out. And like, I'm so excited to have it come out in my hometown, and it's like another year until it's going to come out here, and it's out in Norway. But one of the most touching moments, I think, really in the whole process for me, is I got an email from an elderly reader in Norway, and it hadn't come out in the United States yet. And he had checked it out from his local public library, my book in Norway. And it gave me goosebumps. It really did. I thought, it drew me back to that those moments of being a child, especially, and looking and not knowing what you're going to find on the shelf in a library. And he had done that and stumbled across my book, because at that point it was a complete unknown. It was just a little hardcover book, you know, of Alaskan writer, and it was just really exciting. And it went on to be on the Norway bestseller list, and it was actually one of the most checked out books in Norway for that year on the library list, which was, I was very excited about. That was really exciting. And then eventually, it finally came out in the United States. I think it came out in February of 2012. So 4 years before, I had told my friends, I have an agent. And they kept saying, so where's your book? So for 4 years, I kept telling them, I swear to you, I wrote a book, and I swear there's a publisher in New York who's going to publish it. So it did come out in hardcover then, did go on to be on the New York Times bestseller list, and in ways was sort of a life-altering process. I get asked that a lot about, like, how did it change my life? And in ways, a lot. I mean, I was suddenly flying to New York and to London. My husband and I were going on these trips. I was doing events in Denver, Portland. I had an international tour, which was sort of a mixed blessing of 5 weeks, over 80 hours in an airplane, not that I was counting, landing in New Zealand for 36 hours. That's how much time I had in New Zealand. But the blessings of having my family get to go to these places with me and all that. But the funny thing is that in a lot of ways, my life hasn't changed at all. And I've told this joke before, but it's true. Just a few days after I got the news about it being a Pulitzer finalist, I was in my rubber boots in our yard, mucking out our chicken house and dealing with, you know how breakup is here, it's disgusting. And I all of a sudden I thought, wait a minute, my book was a Pulitzer finalist. But then I thought, you know what, I'm glad. I really truly am that my life on a day-to-day basis with my family here in Alaska is the same as it has always been, and I'm grateful for that, and it's important to me. And my relationship with libraries has continued in a new and different way. I was so honored when Anchorage Reads, it was chosen for the Anchorage Reads program, and being out here on the lawn that snowy day with the children and their families building snowmen, it was really exciting. And I've done some events with Bend, Oregon, had done a similar kind of one community, one read, and I just found out that Rochester, New York chose it, so I'll be going there in March. So I'm continuing this relationship with libraries, and as I work on my next book, I am too. I was actually just in your the Alaska section here not that long ago doing research for my next book. When I'm in town in Palmer and I need a quiet spot to take my laptop and work, I go to Palmer Public Library. Sutton Library is where I take my daughter so they can browse the stacks and see what they'll find. So libraries are very much important to me, which was one of the reasons I was excited about coming to speak to you all tonight, to just say thank you for those of you who are doing all this hard work of trying to remind, I think that all community people would say, we can't have a community without a library, but they don't necessarily put their money and effort there. And I think it's you know, I think we're library people, we're book people, we don't tend to be rah-rah, we're quiet, we're unassuming maybe sometimes. And so those of you who are willing to go out there and raise the money and help libraries become even more vital to our communities is so important. And it really makes a difference in people's lives. And I hope you know just personally how much it has meant to me. So thank you very much. And I'm very happy to open it up to any questions anybody has, absolutely.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with A1 Ivy, award-winning author of The Snow Child. She was recorded speaking at the Lusac Library on October 9th at an event hosted by the Anchorage Friends of the Library. Following A1's talk on the important role of libraries in her life, she responded to questions from audience members. First, she was asked, "What's your new book about?"
Oh, sure, yeah, thank you for asking that. And it's a really different situation than writing The Snow Child. When I was working on The Snow Child, I think my mom, my husband, and my daughters knew I was writing a book. You know, nobody else knew. So it's a funny situation. I actually have a contract for it. I'm on deadline, which is a good thing. I didn't have to agree to that, but I actually like deadlines, so I'm working a little under a little deadline pressure. And it's called Shadows on the Wolverine. So those of you who have read The Snow Child, the Wolverine River is just, I created it. It was inspired by the Matanuska Valley. But I was becoming really obsessed with geography and worried about, as a reporter, I had run into that. If you mess up any little thing, someone's going to catch you on it and be mad at you. So I thought, you know, wait a minute, I could just invent my own river, which is what I did. So the Wolverine River, but this is in 1885, and it's based on the Allen Expedition. Some of you might know it. I'm sure there's lots of information down here about it. The Henry T. Allen Expedition actually went up the Copper River in 1885, and it was the first, you know, European-American traversing of the entire state of Alaska. So they went up the Copper River, over the mountains, down the Tanana, and out the Yukon. I'm sort of retelling that story, but making it completely my own because it's fiction. And so it's different characters, and it's kind of the premise or the fun part about it is as they venture deeper into the heart of Alaska, they're encountering the myths and fables of the land are real and occurring as they enter into the heart of Alaska. And I'm telling it through journals and documents. It was fun writing The Snow Child. I got to write some letters between Mabel and Ada, and I had a lot of fun with that. So I'm writing a lot of letters and journal entries. And so, yep, thank you for asking. Thank you.
What happened to the first book you started writing before The Snow Child?
Oh, that's a great question. No, and you know, it's a little daunting, I think. I always feel a little bad saying this if I know there's a writer in the audience, because basically I spent 4 some years on a book that will never see the light of day, as it was. And as I talk with other writers, I realize this is really common. Either you rewrite that first novel so many times that it doesn't really resemble the one you started out on, or you abandon that first one, do something different. It's like I had to kind of have a practice run, and it's terrible to say a 4-year practice run. But the fun part of it has been I did love my characters. I was really attached to them. It was plot problems that I had. So I've taken those characters and I've put them into short stories, which has been a lot of fun for me because short stories are actually challenging for me because they don't feel fully realized like a novel. Whereas if I sort of grab these characters that I know and love and put them in my stories, then that feels more real to me. So I don't feel like it was a waste, but it is 4 years of a novel that won't ever see the light of day.
Another audience member wanted to know, has The Snow Child been published in Russia?
The question is, has it been published in Russia? This is the funniest thing to me. Not that I ever anticipated it would ever be in another country. But if someone said it's going to be in one country, what's it going to be? I would have thought Russia. No. It's in Czech and Slovakian. It's in German. It's in Korean, Chinese, and not Russian. Isn't that funny? Yeah, who would have thought? No rhyme or reason to it.
Are your short stories published anywhere?
You know, the Alaska Humanities Forum just recently published, I think, in their quarterly is one of my short stories. It appeared originally on an online place called Five Chapters, and so it's in their publication. I've also had a few things in Cirque, or actually one short story in Cirque, which is a wonderful literary magazine here in Alaska. But you know, it's really a funny business. It's actually in the UK that the book has done the best, and I am getting a lot of requests for short stories and essays, and so I was having It was a little stressful, actually. Like, I would get, my publicist was super active there, and she would email and say, I need a short story next month for Woman and Home magazine here in London. What? So that was actually where a lot of them I was writing for. And I love Samantha, my publicist, but I'm kind of glad I haven't heard from her lately. She was making me work very hard, so. Yes.
The next question asked of Eowyn was, have there been any offers to make The Snow Child into a movie?
Yeah, so any offers to make it a movie? You know, we have had some interest different way along the way. To be honest, nothing's panned out from it. I have mixed feelings about that, actually. I'm kind of okay if it never, you know, either way, I guess, because I think all of us have encountered that where you read a book that you love and then you see the movie and you think, oh, you know. But one of the fun things is that a composer in London is writing an opera based on it, which I am actually, you know, it's funny, when he first contacted me, I thought, oh, an opera? Like, I was having this hard time imagining Jack and Mabel singing operatically. It was just weird. But I'm actually really excited about it. And it's a funny coincidence that my oldest daughter is actually very interested in opera singing. So I've been learning more about it. And he's been emailing with me. And they just got done with the libretto. And he's doing the music. And they're going to produce it there, I think, maybe in the next year or so. So yeah, it'll be fun to see what happens with it. Yeah.
Next, another audience member asked, what's your favorite place you visited on your book tour?
Okay, my favorite place. You know, it's funny because one of them, and this is embarrassing to admit, is Juneau. I growing up here, I had never been to our state capitol, which is just appalling to me. But I finally got the chance to go down there and do an event with the bookstore, and it was I was telling Anna earlier at the beginning of the thing, it was actually kind of a moving experience for me to see the history of our government there and to be there. And there, you know, I have to say, a lot of the international travel was just overwhelming. It really was. I was just so much going from one hotel room to the next. But I loved Australia. I really did. My youngest daughter and my husband got to meet me there. And the people reminded me of Alaskans, just very, I don't know, there was just something about, I just felt immediately at home. And my daughter got to hold a koala bear. It was very, we had a great time. So there's been wonderful times, but I realized that maybe I'm a little more of a homebody than I realized. You know, as a teenager, I dreamt of world travel, and suddenly I was doing it and thinking, this is harder than I thought it was going to be.
What did you read as a kid, and what do you read now?
Right. Oh, this is a great question. You know, as a little girl, I think some of the books that first sort of set me off, one was The Boxcar Children, the very first one. The rest of the books aren't as good. That's how it usually is with series, right? The first one's the best. And Island of the Blue Dolphins, Julia the Wolves. I always love those sort of, what it is about us kids that we love like an orphan. we you know, that a child who has to survive on its own, which I think, funny enough, I think sort of entered into my writing of The Snow Child. There was a part of me that wanted to prove to everyone that a little girl could survive in the Alaska wilderness. I ended up not going that route and trying to give them all my evidence of how she could have survived, but I love those kinds of books. And now, and actually this kind of goes into what I was talking about earlier about getting to do some world travel, and what I've loved about the book, doing what it's done, is it's given me a chance to meet some of my very favorite authors. So this sounds dreadfully pretentious, but I'm going to tell you anyways. I was in Paris on stage with Toni Morrison. now, granted, there were like 50 other authors up there, but she was right next to me, and I was really excited about it. And I got to meet Louise Erdrich, who, Love Medicine was a book that sort of set me off on wanting to write fiction, of feeling different about what fiction could be. And she was one of the stars at this Paris event, but I found her in a rare moment where it was just her and her daughter at her stand, and I got to go up and say hi and tell her how much I tried not to be a total geek about it, but I was very excited. And actually, I just read her newest, The Roundhouse, which won the National Book Award. Fantastic book. And you know, and when I'm outside of Alaska, I often I'm excited to talk about a lot of the Alaskan books that I love so much up here right now. I feel like it's a really exciting time in literature up here. I actually had kind of an embarrassing thing happen, though. I was at Homer Library, and I was going on about all these great books, and a gentleman had just asked a question, and I went on. And I said, in Pilgrim's Wilderness. And everyone's like, that's Tom right there that you were just talking to. And I was like, sorry about that. But I thought that was a difficult read, but a fantastic book. And yeah, so I could kind of go on and on, but I'll stop there. Thank you for the question, though.
Another audience member asked Eowyn to pronounce the name of the main character in The Snow Child.
Faina. You know what's funny, and this is I don't know if any of you, I think those of us who read a lot run into this problem where you've read a word a million times, but you're not sure if you say it right. So I came across that name researching online, because I wanted to have a different name. I wanted it to be Russian, and I came across that one, and it meant light, and I felt like I could kind of play with that a little bit. But I thought it was Faina for the longest time. And then I actually think it might have been my agent who said, you know, I think, and luckily it was before it was published, so I didn't make a fool out of myself. He's like, I think it's Faina. And so I started doing some more research and kind of wrote that into that a little bit to try to figure out how to explain how you say her name. But yeah, I believe it's Faina. Yeah, absolutely.
Why did you choose not to use quotation marks when Faina speaks?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm glad you recognize that too, because I've actually, so the question was about the quotation marks. Those of you who have read it, some people notice it, some people don't, that when Faina is a part of a conversation, there are no quotation marks. And it's been a funny process, because I've had some people, I shouldn't do this. I read my Amazon reviews. I read my reviews online, which is a dreadful thing to do. But and I'll see people where they'll say, well, it was okay, but there's these terrible grammatical problems. Like, what are these typos? There's no quotation marks. Like, no. And I've had other people misconstrue it to mean that Faina isn't really real. Like, she's just a figment of their imaginations, which isn't really what I intended either. So I guess that's what happens when you take a little bit of a risk. You don't know how it's going to be perceived. But I did not immediately strike upon it. What happened is I started writing her dialogue, and I just felt like I put the quotation marks, and I felt like I'd ruined her somehow. Like, suddenly she was so grounded and like, oh, it just felt awful. And so then I started experimenting with just taking out all the quotation marks. I'm a huge fan of Cormac McCarthy, some of the people who do different things with dialogue, and that didn't seem right. And then it did strike. It took me a while to get there, though. And I thought, wait a minute, what if I just use the quotation marks when she's not there and otherwise take them out? And what I hoped it would do is sort of create a sort of ethereal quietness to her presence, you know, just the sense that she's there, but it's very soft. Like I said, it hasn't always been construed right, but that was what I was going for. So, but thank you for noticing it. It makes me happy.
Absolutely. The next question from the audience was, how involved were you with the audio recording of your book, The Snow Child?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, did you? Oh, fun. You know what? I had absolutely nothing to do with it. Yeah, I didn't even know who the person was that was recording it. I haven't even really listened to it, to be honest, just because this is an awful confession to make. But by the time it came out, I was just sick to death of the story itself. You know, like the thought of listening to it on my drive or something, I just couldn't do it. But I've heard good things about the woman who's did, I think it was Deborah Monk. I think that's who did the audio. And I heard she did a great job. One thing that's kind of fun, in my next contract for my next book, my agent actually negotiated that I get first try at doing the audio. Which, at the time, I was really excited, because if I can't do it, they'll find somebody better, you know, but I could give it a shot. But now, as I'm writing some Atna Athabaskan words in some difficult pronunciation things, I'm thinking, ooh, maybe I better make sure I know how to say faina or whatever words I'm going to have in here, absolutely. Yeah, great question, though. But and it's funny, too, about the audio is that someone pointed out, though, that in the audio you don't, of course, know that there's no quotation marks with Faina's dialogue, which was that was interesting to me to think about.
What is the backstory of the main character, Faina's parents?
Well, this is a funny thing that happened. As I was talking about, like, Island of the Blue Dolphins, these sort of survival stories, when I met my agent, I actually had a lot of chapters that were from Faina's perspective that explain more of how she had come to be, who her parents were, how she was surviving, how this was all working. And my agent said, he's very insightful and he's very blunt. And he said, yeah, I'd axe those. I don't think you want those chapters. And I thought, huh, okay, let me think about this. And I realized he was right, because they were doing what those quotation marks in a way were doing. They were sapping away her mysteriousness, you know, they were ruining her. And so I took them all out, and then I realized that I don't know if they're true anymore. I don't know how to explain that, but the book that I wrote is everything I know to be true about Faina. It's hard for me to explain, but once I took those chapters out, those aren't necessarily a part of her story anymore. It's an odd experience to try to describe as a writer, but I realized that this is really Jack and Mabel's story, even though it's called The Snow Child. It's their story, and it's about their transformation. And in the end, all that matters, and I don't want to give anything away, those of you haven't read it, but Faina is not a part of their life anymore at the end. And that's kind of all that really, that's the truth that they have to come to terms with. So I guess that's all I have.
What are your feelings on romance novels, and did you consciously decide to use some romance novel techniques in The Snow Child?
Right. So the question was about the maybe similarities of some of the techniques used in romance writing, and what my feelings are about romance books. You know, the truth is, I'm not a big genre reader. I don't read a ton of, like, I don't read a lot of mysteries. I don't read a lot of fantasy. Don't read a lot of romance, but there are certainly books that I feel like rise above genre that have those elements. So, Cold Mountain is a love story. I mean, and Snow Falling on Cedars is a love story. I love love stories. And with the idea of telling it from two different perspectives, part of that, to be completely honest, is Mabel is a drag. I love her, but she is a downer. And after I would write a chapter with her, I would just be like, I need a break from you. You know, like, I just need a new way of looking at things. And so Jack was refreshing to me, because he's just, it breaks my heart that I've had a few readers who say that they don't like Jack, that he's like, cold or indifferent. And I think, oh, I didn't quite get him right then, because I he's very caring. He's just not fretting over every little thing like Mabel is. So part of it was that nice switch for me to get that switch in perspective. But I am not, I think it's an exciting thing in fiction right now that I think we're a lot less afraid of genre than maybe, I hope. I think that a lot of writers nowadays are excited to look at what different genre writers are doing with techniques, and we're happy to use whatever works, you know. And I see Karen Russell. I mean, there's some great authors out there who are incorporating fantasy and mystery, and it's just like, use it all. It's fun. So yeah, thank you. Well, there's a lot of books that are written that way. I mean, like again, Cold Mountain is a great example. I mean, I think it's not an uncommon. I mean, for some reason, it seems like a lot of literary fiction is told in like first person, sort of autobiographical. I don't know. I guess I don't feel like it's a romance technique. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that, but I feel like it's a technique that lots of different authors have used. But I'm not opposed to giving credit, you know, wherever it's due. So yeah, absolutely.
Considering The Snow Child has been translated in so many different languages, how do you make sure the translation is correct? How do you know that it's
being represented? That's a great question. And this is a really interesting, translation is a fascinating concept, I think. And I don't know much about it. My mom has actually been doing translation work with her poetry, her MFA program, and I think it's really interesting. The truth is, I have absolutely no idea. I mean, I've been fortunate that some of the translators have contacted me to ask specific questions, you know, like what, my French translator emailed me and said, exactly what kind of chair is it in the cabin? Like, you can't just say chair in French, you know, I need to know what kind of chair. But most of them I never hear from, or I get an email saying, oh, it was fun translating your book, you know, it's exciting, whatever, but I don't have any say. And I've had a few lucky moments where a woman who had read it in French, and I asked her, and she was fluent in both French and English, so I was able to ask her, so what did you think about the translation? She said it was wonderful, but I have no idea. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and it's actually really interesting because I think that in some countries, again, I'm a little obsessed with statistics and checking things I probably shouldn't look at, but I noticed that the English version is actually selling better in Germany than the German version. And I think it's because, I mean, so many people in other countries besides ours read and speak languages besides their own, and so a lot of them are reading it in English instead, which is exciting to me because I don't know. And I'm sure there's some words that just can't be translated into that. I'm trying to remember what it was. I think I had alders, and I did a Google Translate of another translation. I can't remember what it was, and it said rhododendrons. And so there's things that are going to just be different. But it has made me think about when I read books that are translated. Out Stealing Horses is a wonderful book I really enjoyed, partly because the language just feels different to me. And now I wonder how much of it is the translation, and what would it be like to read? And I think it's Norwegian, isn't it? Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, it's a great, great question, and I have no. No idea.
Are the names of the characters the same in translated versions of The Snow Child?
Right, right. Well, here's a weird thing. My name has actually been changed in some of my translations. Ivy, and I won't say it's like Ivy, they're changing my last name. So I know the names have been changed in some. Is it Jack and Mabel? Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I think in some it has been. I'm trying to remember which translation I was glancing at, and I noticed, because I thought, where are Jack and Mabel's names? Those are some words I'd recognize, and then I realized that they had changed them. So yeah, I think they do, yeah. But you know, it's funny, I don't know, I feel a certain distance from the book now. Like, I realized that once it got published and it's out, it's exciting, it's in libraries, it's in bookstores, it's been translated, it's not really mine anymore. I don't know how to explain it really. I don't feel a great deal of ownership over it in some strange way. I feel like people are going to translate it the best they can, people are going to read it and get different things out of it, and it's just kind of out there. I had to let go of it, I guess, a little bit. Okay.
Next, another audience member asked, how much of your book was discarded before The Snow Child was published?
As I was working on it? Right. So the question was, like, how much of my writing had I discarded or kept along the way? Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I think especially with computers becoming so much a part of the writing process for a lot of us now, editing is like a constant process for me. A lot of times kind of how I get revved up to write is I read, you know, a chapter or two from what I've been working on, and I work my way forward, and so I'm constantly editing. But I can say that those cuts of Faina's chapters are probably the only major cuts that I had. And that came fairly early on that I decided to make that change. And then, you know, I often get asked, I think people have a lot of fear or have heard horror stories about editors, and I think probably rightfully so in some cases. I was fortunate that my agent, for one thing, really pushed me to make it as good as I could early on, and I never felt like he was pushing me in the wrong direction. In fact, one of my biggest worries when I was working on it and hadn't shared it with anyone is I thought anyone outside of Alaska is going to say you need to cut out these hunting and trapping scenes, like it's too gruesome, it's too bloody. And I was pleasantly surprised when Jeff said, you know what, that's what's unique about your story. You need to write into that. You need to write more of that and make that more relevant to your story. And he was absolutely right. So he was great. And then when the time it got to my editor, she said, one thing I'm excited about this book is it's pretty much ready to go, which wasn't a credit to me. It was a credit to Jeff because he really pushed me hard. But she actually had me move a chapter up in time. So it was just a matter of swapping, and it changed the significance. Without giving anything away, it changed the significance of the fox. Something happens with the fox, and it came later in time and becomes a transformative thing for Faina. So she was great. I couldn't be more happy with, I guess I feel like, you know, when you've been writing a long time, to have anyone care enough about your writing to want to help you make it better, as hard as it is sometimes to hear, like, it's not that great, you need to fix it, that's hard, and I would get mad. But then I would try to remind myself, like, I'm blessed. I have someone who is wanting to read it and help me make it better. And I tried to embrace that idea without making it something I didn't want it to be, you know? So it is a tough process, I think, when you're going through editing, yeah.
And finally, the last question from the audience asked of A.O. and Ivy was, did anyone argue your decision on the fate of the fox character in the book, The Snow Child?
What happened to the fox, right? You know, it's so funny, the things that I think are going to make people angry sometimes aren't, and then some of the things, the fox what has been a difficult thing. And all I can say is it was true to Garrett's temperament, and it was important to the story. And I don't know that, it's hard because, you know, you don't know how much to explain your symbolism and what you intend, because I do want to leave that to readers, but I can say that I meant that what happens with the fox to be symbolic in terms of a transformation for Faina. And I guess, too, things are hard, you know? I that's just the truth of the world, and I guess I wanted to kind of look into that directly to some extent, I guess. So, but, yeah, not everybody's happy with me about it. And I am very happy, too, to sign books or in the... Is anyone didn't feel comfortable asking a question? Sometimes it can be a little daunting in this public format. Feel free to come up and just talk with me or ask a question or whatever. And thank you very much. Thanks to Friends of Library and to Anchorage Library staff. You guys are fantastic, and I really appreciate having the chance to be here tonight. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with A.O. and Ivy, award-winning author of The Snow Child. She was recorded speaking at the Lusac Library in Anchorage at an event hosted by the Anchorage Friends of the Library on October 9th, 2013. Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online anytime at alaskapublic.org. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Platt. Thanks for listening.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.